This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to Progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit Progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
Hi, I'm Bede Hill, and this is The D Word, the show where we talk dementia. Welcome along for another hour of Dementia Chat and Music right here on The D Word. This week, technology is our subject with my guest John Ramsey from Social Ability, who's having this program uses interactive light technology to provide meaningful activities for people living with cognitive challenges. John will be joining me right after this from Dean Owens, where my guest is John Ramsey from Social Ability. Well, John, it's a pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Going to be talking about social ability and hopefully a lot of happiness and smiles as well, which is a big feature. But before we get into all that, I mean, just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this whole area.
Thanks very much, Pete, for having me. And congrats on everything that you've just been telling me about. It's wonderful to see. Well, I used to be a corporate lawyer in the city, and I think I got to a point in my life where I realized I wanted to potentially move into a career with something with a little bit more of a social impact and purpose. And so I quit my job, not necessarily knowing what to do, and thought about something that meant a lot to me. And that actually was dementia, because when I was 12, my dad was diagnosed with dementia. And I spent 10 years caring for him. But I think, like maybe a lot of people who looked after a parent when they were young, I sort of put it in a box after he'd finished his journey. And I didn't really want to think about it. I didn't want to define it. I'd spent so many weekends, days living it. And, you know, it was very hard speaking to a parent when you're in your teenage years who doesn't know your name or who you are. And I kind of want to put that behind me. So I cracked on with law, but I realized actually, if I'm not prepared to get involved and try and improve the world of people living with dementia, then who is? And especially amongst, you know, getting younger people involved, because it's often thought of as an older person's disease, just something that happens to you when you're older. And I think I'm 40 now, but I think that we're not going to really change society and change the world unless you're getting the younger generations involved and pushing it. People often compare to what we've seen in the world of cancer and how that's come to the fore and how we would love dementia to follow the same journey. And so sort of in that moment, I started working in the world of dementia, helping out, raising awareness, and eventually decided to set up Social Ability because I knew that interactive lights and sounds were really great for people living with dementia. But that they could be utilized in a really good way alongside a structured program so that carers, staff and family could really use our technology to improve the lives of those living with dementia. So it's kind of been an eye-opener from, you know, looking at care homes as a teenager with my dad, who was 52 when he was diagnosed, to now working with care homes. It's been an incredible journey, but I'm sort of really proud that I've been able to kind of change my life and do something that gives what happened to me as a younger guy with my dad meaning, and I'm sure we'll get onto it, but the feedback we get every day with the happiness program is so good that it really gets you out of bed.
Absolutely. And yeah, you know, that must have been a really steep learning curve from age of 12. When, you know, you go through your teenage years, you're going through all sorts of things. And like you say, you know, it's not surprising you compartmentalized it in the end and want to put it in the box because, it, you know, it must have been tough times.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really tough because also my dad was a rugby player. He was a big guy. You know, there are physical things that you have to deal with someone in their 50s. And, you know, it's not my dad, but it's in my dad's body. There's walking down the street. You know, there's just so many things, like every single part of your life is affected by it. I think I now look back in it and I would act up at school. Because when I was on holiday or at the weekends with my dad, it was actually more stressful than it had been at school. But for most people, the weekend and holidays are when you get to relax. And so when I'm going to school, I'm not, you know, I've got a very short fuse. I learned to deal with it, and it's given me a lot of confidence and ability to understand and be present. But I look back at the 14, 15-year-old me, and it's hard enough growing up anyway. And don't get me wrong, there's so many people that have different lives and different stories, and I was lucky to have a very supportive family, but it was very, very hard. And the relentlessness of caring for someone with dementia, with the greatest respect in the world to the person living with dementia, the relentlessness of being a carer every single day is so hard. And not least, I look back on it as a teenager, I'm not sure sometimes how I managed to deal with it.
Sparking laughter and happiness can be a dark world, and I think it's great that, you know, social ability, first you've got that plastered over the front of your website, because, you know, we know some of the dark stuff, you've gone through the dark days, but things like laughter and happiness are also, you know, really important in the story.
100%. People forget so much about what you can do when you live with dementia, or what you can do for someone living dementia. Often it's almost what you can't. A lot of the care industry has been structured around keeping someone safe. What does that mean? It means washing them, feeding them, keeping them locked in a room. It doesn't necessarily mean having technology like ours or other activities that actually engage that person, or training staff and people who might not have experienced someone living with dementia to be patient and to be proactive in going towards them, to, you know, find the triggers that create that spark, that sparking of laughter and happiness. And that's what we're focused on. We're focused on the present, the personal interaction. I remember going to care homes with my dad when my dad was in the care home. And I mean, I feel a bit ashamed to say it now, but I got bored. I didn't know what to do. I'd go and see my dad, and he would walk around very slowly with a purpose, but do laps of a care home. And I would say, "Hey, Dad, are you there? Hi, it's John." And he just wouldn't know who I was. So I'd hold his hand and walk around with him, but he wasn't smiling. I wasn't changing his mood. I wasn't, you know, for all intents and purposes, wasn't aware I was there. And, you know, it's not his fault. I just wish I'd known that there was a way to engage him better, especially through, you know, things like our technology. It is very dark, but it doesn't have to be dark. There's so many people living well with dementia. It's fundamentally really hard. That is your baseline. And there's no way of getting away from that. And it's extremely hard on the carer. There are so many different things that you can do to have a better existence. And I think one of the number one things I wish I see more of, it's good practice in clusters around the UK, but is just like the community before you reach care homes, like dementia cafes, groups in libraries, places where you can go where you're the carer and you realize you're not on your own and that there are other people out there. And then you can get tips and tricks. You can, you know, help each other out. A bit like, you know, a bit like what it's like. I've got young kids, but, you know, there's so much done for parents to meet up and looking after their kids, but there's like a social anxiety around doing that with someone living with dementia. And it's not to equate children with dementia, but it is to give like that structure and that support and that community. And then you can have some great times. I mean, my dad would laugh Like, and you'd laugh so hard at some silly little thing, and it would be great. But just that decline, it wasn't always like that, and it got very, very hard.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Kelly McQuee, who channels a little bit of Dusty Springfield and Verge of Tears here on UK Health Radio, where you'll find over 40 health-related shows every week, available for listen again and download from the website at www.ukhealthradio.com. My guest this week is John Ramsey from Social Ability. Yeah, you know, you mentioned the technology. I mean, you know, tell us a little bit about it, what it is, what it does.
So first and foremost, the Happiness Programme is a partnership. Technology isn't anything unless you use it properly and it has an impact. Otherwise, it's just a piece of kit, but it's not. We care about the impact of the technology. And so it's a partnership with our clients. It's based around an interactive projector. So that's, if you can imagine a projector the size of a shoebox that projects light animation onto a surface, through the use of an infrared camera, you can actually play with the light. So there might be leaves on a table and you can sweep the leaves. But because we have it on a stand and it's portable, you can project on walls, you can project on the ceiling for people in bed, on bed sheets, on the floor, from room to room, all around care homes, libraries, sport arenas, everywhere. And it comes with a structured program of training. So we offer unlimited training because one of our biggest hurdles is the amount of staff turnover there are in care centres, where I think it's about 40% of staff turnover each year. So we can have the greatest partner, but their staff change. We then have to retrain them and get them up to the standards and make sure the technology is being used. Has a series of nearly 200 games and activities ranging from football to karaoke, bingo, card games, horse racing. We try and make it seasonal so that it follows a lot of the cultural events during a year, be it Christmas, Easter, Eid, Passover, the Olympics, Wimbledon, Pride, lots of different things. So that actually the activities themselves are also relevant to the staff, because we don't want the games to become repetitive for them, albeit often we have to teach staff that if a game works today, it's going to work tomorrow for the loved one living with dementia. So don't forget that if you're getting that interaction, hold on to that, because you're going to keep that person happy. And yeah, it's ever evolving. We co-design lots of games. We're actually doing a research project with the Alzheimer's Society at the minute around, and funded by Sport England, talking about three themed games that we've been chosen by the Alzheimer's Society community and how they can create physical interaction. And as I sort of said, just to touch on the impact, we measure it in how the activities are being used, be it physical interaction, social or cognitive, but also, you know, because someone who might not be feeling themselves, we get them to play with the activities. Does that actually reduce the need for antipsychotic medication? If we get people playing with it before mealtimes, do they eat more? Does it get people to sit down around a table, so reduce the risk of falls? And in all the time, yes, 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 when used properly. It's obviously something that should be used alongside lots of other activities and great things in the home. But it's a really, really cool piece of kit and has some of the like most cherished moments of my life, I think, that I hear and see.
Well, football, Wimbledon, you've sold it to me already. But you said about, you know, work with the Alzheimer's Society, and you obviously need that body of research as well to go alongside what you're providing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's a lot of research around how interactive lights and sounds engage people living with cognitive disabilities. It's just, I think, actually focusing on the training of staff about what's possible. And it's general dementia awareness training alongside the use of our technology that we're giving. If you haven't experienced dementia, you do need patience and you need to be proactive towards the person. you take it for granted that you can start up a conversation around having a cup of tea with someone, and that that's just natural for you. But it might not be natural if you have dementia. So you need to go to that person, you need to find their interests, and then you need to kind of trigger interaction around that. And that's what we spend our lives talking about. There's no one size fits all. Everyone's a different person. But it's about engaging that person on that personal level. We also do it in kind of a sensory experience. So we have a lot of people living in beds, and we will put sensory stuff up on the ceiling for them. So they're looking at tropical beaches, train rides, the sky, stars. And that gives someone, you know, especially towards end of life, we do a lot of end of life care. That gives, you know, what would you rather look at? Pictures of your family on the ceiling or a blank ceiling in your final moments? You know, it's the toughest moment you'll ever have. And to be able to give someone something in that moment is really, really critical. So the uses are just incredible. We've recently gone on to autism, learning disabilities, schools, and in rehabilitation with the NHS. So, yeah, it's really, really magical.
And in terms of, you know, when you first approach people, you know, for some reason or other, some people are a little bit resistant in terms of technology. And we also tend to put people in boxes with technology. The kind of anybody over 50 is not going to be interested in all this newfangled stuff, which is far, far from the truth. But, you know, is that something you have to overcome as well?
A little bit. I mean, how our happiness program works is you turn it on and you can almost instantaneously play, and it's just one or two arrows to get through the activities. So on a very, very basic level, switch it on and you get activity. It's then about holding someone's hand, monitoring, are they using it, calling them up to give them that advice, going in person to show them how easy it is. And actually, once you start playing with our technology, you don't look at the equipment itself. You look at the lights, and it's very, very natural. Now, in comparison to something like a VR headset, there's nothing you have to take off someone's head. There's no kind of, it's almost like engaging that reality in a much more natural way. And yeah, once you get it, once it clicks and it's very easy, it's just remarkable. You know, people sweeping up leaves, catching fish, they really feel like they're doing that. And it's wonderful because it can kind of get you out, especially in a care home or a hospital. It can get you out of the institutionalized feel you might have, if that makes sense, because you can get very quickly kind of your world shrinks. So to think that you've left, be it have a train ride on the wall, if you've left your care home or your hospital, even for 20 minutes, it gives you that break, and it makes it easier to kind of deal with the rest of the day.
When I was with the Alzheimer's Society, we did a lot of things around CST, cognitive stimulative therapy. I would have loved something like this, because it seems to very much lead into all the ideals of CST.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're actually looking at CST, because CST is, I think, the only non-pharmaceutical therapy on NICE guidelines. And we've actually been working about through with some practitioners around how our technology can be used for CST. And that's the gold. That's the dream for us, is to get NICE to say that this is actually a therapy that can be used in hospitals, and then your clinicians are going to use it more. It's going to gain a better reputation, and it's going to change people's lives. So, you know, we do a lot of that, and it's something that we're very keen to work on at the minute.
And I've looked at your website, which I think is excellent. And, hopefully listeners, when they've heard this, will go out and have a look and learn a lot more. And, once you've got your kind of formal research, where you can put percentage of people and reduction in falls or use of drugs, etc., you also got what you call a happiness tracker. And I always used to think, people used to say to me, well, you get people in and you give them a whole day's worth of activities. How do you actually measure they've enjoyed it? And I used to say, by the fact they're smiling when they go home and still talk about it. But sometimes it's difficult to measure that, isn't it? That kind of, that hunch that this has been a really good thing.
Yeah, so our statistics are taken, I think it's from nearly 500 care centres where we take them through a survey and we ask them, how have you seen an improvement to the level that there was pre the happiness programme? It's a hard thing to gauge because often the person living with dementia, you can't ask them directly, especially at the later stages. But yeah, are you creating happiness? And it's so evident that you switch our technology on and everyone starts smiling and laughing and moving and concentrating and talking together. And you compare that with the image where people are maybe sat in a chair asleep. There's a newspaper on in the middle, and no one's and sorry, there's a newspaper lying in the middle. There's a television on, and no one is engaging with anything. And that's the activity for the morning. The difference could not be more stark. Don't get me wrong. Our technology is best where the carers and staff are best and the family and friends are best. But what we're trying to do is take all that learning from the top 50% of our clients who we deal with day in, day out, and put that on the bottom 50% of our clients. And so that everyone gets a better and better experience. And one thing I've learned is we're never going to be able to change everyone's life or affect everyone. But as long as tomorrow is better than yesterday, we've made progress in helping people living with dementia.
They are Muscadine Bloodline, and that was our board, Anne McGregor. Always good to hear from you here on the show. You can catch us on social media as Radio TDW or by email to tdwradio@gmail.com. I'm chatting to my guest this week, John Ramsey from Social Ability, who run the Happiness Programme. I think I'd like that on the T-shirt, actually. I think as long as tomorrow is better than yesterday, we've done a good job. I mean, the other thing I guess is in the use of technology, it kind of promotes intergenerational discussions as well. Because, like you said, take yourself back to the teenager in the game, not knowing what to do. Well,
Yeah.
bring the kids in, and you've got a bit of interactive technology, and I guess they buy into it immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the intergenerational interactions that we've seen, be it a nursery or a primary school that come round and play, a care home for it can often feel like quite a scary place for a younger person, and quite a foreign environment. I always wonder why there isn't soft play and more toys available in care homes so that, not only are kids wanting to go there, therefore their parents want to come and then visit the grandparents and there's something to do together. And often our interactive lights do give that. I mean, as I said earlier, we actually work with a lot of schools and day centres for young children with autism and adults with learning disabilities. The interaction's incredible. It has to be a slightly different type of interaction. There might need to be slightly more intensity, more competition, more learning and educational. Whereas for people living with later stage dementia, you're concentrating on reminiscence, sensory and relaxation and all that sort of outcomes. But yeah, getting the kids in just livens up the place and having something for them to do that's inherently attractive is brilliant.
And, you just mentioned it there a little bit, I think. The fact that your technology can go all the way across a dementia journey, and even mild cognitive impairment right at one end, all the way through to later stage dementia. It's, it's a universal piece of kit which can go across all those stages.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, don't get me wrong. We fundamentally try and help the most isolated people in society. So generally, it will be people at the mid to late stage of dementia. That has been traditionally our focus. More recently, with cognitive games, more intense games, that is helping people at earlier stages of dementia. But for someone that's still able to do a jigsaw or a crossword or play a game of cards, carry on doing that. We're for the people that can't do that because they always, because quite frankly, it can be harder to engage someone from mid to late with mid to late stage dementia. people stop doing it, and naturally humans stop trying, and they go on potentially what might be an easier option for someone who's earlier stages. But what we're trying to say is use our technology to interact with those who are the most isolated, because nothing else works as well. And so that's sort of where we're at the minute. We're really trying to promote that side to the spectrum, because they're the ones that need it most.
Yeah, and I think it's important that, you know, you're at the heart of the whole care jigsaw here. And, you know, you're demonstrating what you're saying. This is one part of what should be a whole care jigsaw that's put together in terms of, you know, caring for all people. I think another good part, I'm looking at your website now, actually, and the good part is your good news and also your case studies, because there's nothing like someone actually seeing someone and the difference that is made to them. And, you know, even if you just read it, you can suddenly think, hey, you know, this is a really good thing here.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our pictures and videos paint 1,000 words. There's nothing quite like seeing it. I mean, we often, as part of what we do, we offer, you know, free demonstrations online, in person, trying to get people to see it with their loved ones. Then it works really well. But, you know, when you're in well over 1,000 care centres across the UK and Ireland and a few other countries, you know, I'm pretty confident that what we do works. But equally, because it's a program for us, it's about making sure it works in 3, 4, 5 years. And that's why we become a partner. That's why we always producing new games as part of the package, and why we offer this unlimited training, so that staff use it and keep using it. And it's just important to, you know, we call up care homes and say, you're not using it. You're paying for this. Please, can we engage with someone so that they can use it? Because we can't be in there turning it on, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, sadly, that's an issue, as you were appertaining to right at the beginning of our discussion. The turnover of care staff makes it difficult because, you know, one week you may have a care manager who, hey, this is brilliant, I'm fully behind this. Come back a month's time, they might be gone. And, you know, it's a kind of never ending cycle, I guess. But I mean, when you started all this, you're across the UK, you're across Ireland, you're going into other countries. Did you have any idea that it'd take off like this?
No, not really. I think from a like commercial standpoint, it's sometimes, you know, I do also want to run like a good business that runs, and you have to make some incredibly tough decisions. I've sort of learned that you can't really rely on anyone else, you know, to work as hard or produce the same quality as you. And, you know, I've had to make hard decisions along the way. I stand behind all of those decisions, but they've been really, really, really difficult. But it's all about creating that sustainable impact long term. And I couldn't imagine that, you know, we'd be in North America, we'd be in other continents, and we'd be getting this level of kind of feedback that we do today consistently, and from clients that we've had for 4 or 5 years.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Mindy Smith and Every Once in a While here on The D Word. Well, my guest this week is John Ramsey from Social Ability. And, you know, you've just said you've got a history of happy clients. And I guess they learn a lot how to, you know, operate the technology, etc. But I guess it's a two-way street here. You must learn a lot from them as well.
Yeah, one of the biggest mistakes you can ever make in a business is not to listen to your clients. So we speak, you know, we ask for feedback. We are constantly badgering, sometimes to the point of annoyance, badgering our clients to try and get them to give us feedback, to make sure they're using it, so that we can always improve. And, you know, we improve the hardware, the technology, the reliability. It's never going to be perfect. I was speaking to someone earlier today about like the diversity that's available. You know, we don't have a game for every single country in the entire world, because you can't. But we're trying to listen to the feedback of where do a lot of carers come from? Where do a lot of residents come from? Can we create a game that's going to connect with them in that way. You know, as I said, as long as tomorrow is better than yesterday, then at least we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, don't want to go too techie, but in terms of that, someone comes up to you with an idea for a game. I mean, how long does it take then to turn that into something?
It does depend on the complexity of the game. Sometimes it can be, you know, another quiz, and then it's just, you know, actually, with a couple of games, people can actually write their own quizzes, and then they come on, or they can upload their own photos and their own videos. You also have YouTube accessible on what we do. Sometimes it's a whole new idea, and it might take two, three months. So, yeah, it kind of depends.
And, you know, if we're talking again in 4 or 5 years' time, which I hope we might, you know, where do you think this whole market thing might have developed by then?
Well, obviously, so many care homes, hospitals, you know, I'd argue we work with a lot of patients who have delirium, a lot of ICUs, a lot of A&Es. I would argue there's a place for this on every ward in every hospital. I'd argue that special educational needs becomes more prevalent and is more involved in mainstream education, I would argue that a lot more schools need our sort of technology. And I think that hopefully we'll be able to affect more people within their own home. You know, we work with libraries, sports stadiums, day centres, community centres. But actually, if we could get more of this technology in the home, get family away from screens, interacting with something cool together, you know, there isn't a place where it couldn't be. It's just about allowing and getting the people that pay for care to demand activity in care home, because it doesn't matter what the care home looks like. It could be a 5-star hotel, but if they're not happy and engaging with people in the day, then it's not good care. And that's what we need to demand as a society, is that there is just more money invested in activities and people within care homes.
Absolutely. 100% behind that. I think, yeah, really interesting if, you know, you could develop this into people's homes. And as you said at the beginning, though, I guess that, you know, what's refreshing about this conversation, sometimes you have a conversation about technology where you almost feel like the technology's taken over, whereas, you know, I'm getting the real view that this technology is just part of the whole program, and the technology without the people does not work.
No, exactly. Unless you can, the amount of technology that I've seen in cupboards not being used is crazy. And people might invest a lot up front, but then it doesn't get handed over. It doesn't get, people don't get trained. And so again, technology is only as good as the people using it. So therefore, we have to work with the people using it as a partner, as a program, to ensure that it's used and that there is that impact. And we won't get it right every single time, but we will try our utmost, and we will knock down doors and walls to get in front of people and get them using our tech.
Well, more power to you, John, in doing that. Thank you so much for introducing us to the world of social ability and for being my guest on the D Word.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And if anyone wants to see us, it's www.social-ability.co.uk.
Thanks to John. And as he said, you can find out all about the Happiness Programme at the website social-ability.co.uk. That's all for this edition. Thanks to Angela, my production assistant. Next week, my guest will be Dr. Georgina Charlesworth from University College London, and we'll be talking about the brand new Dementia Network Plus. So until then, thanks for listening, and take care now.